Hi and welcome to the Imperial Sports Business Podcast, where we aim to demystify careers in the sports industry by engaging in conversations with leaders and innovators working in sports and industries adjacent to sports. So join us as we dive deep into stories, insights and experiences that make the business of sports an exhilarating and ever-evolving field. Today we have with us Paul. Paul has been building startups since the age of 18 when he started his studies at the European Sports University. Since then, he's helped scale businesses across various fields, including nutrition, e-commerce, fitness, health, to seven figures in revenue. He recently left his corporate career where he last supported the growth of Fit Tech Club, the biggest business club for tech-driven founders in fitness and health, and founded his own consulting venture. He speaks to me sitting in Bali right now, and hopefully he'll share some expertise on scaling brands and particularly in building online communities with the world. So welcome, Paul. Maybe we can start with a little bit of an introduction on who you are, where you come from, and a little bit on your career so far.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Ishan, first of all, thank you so much for the invitation. Super happy to be here. As you briefly mentioned, I'm dialing in from beautiful Bali this time around. Basically spending some good time abroad here to just, let the business thrive and also the soul just unwind a bit and get some space for that. So super happy about that. What could be interesting for everybody listening is that I basically have a similar background like you guys. Given that I studied myself in sports management and I've been a huge sports enthusiast ever since I started moving, I would say, getting into semi-professional sports in my teenage years in track and field, but also in swimming, hugely passionate about that. And then basically thought, like when I was going into studies, okay, I basically have two main interests. I don't know really where to go, but maybe there's a way to combine the two. So one was kind of all economics in general and how businesses work. So that was one side, and the other side then was sports, right? So that's how it basically came up, that I just said, okay, why not combine the two? Why not go for sports management? In the European sports ecosystem, there's a couple of well-known sports research institutions. I believe the European Sports University in Cologne is one of them. They were huge, especially over the 90s and early 2000s in terms of research, so that was a super attractive path for me to take. And also in that field, I had gotten the chance to get involved into the first startups and to learn a bit about entrepreneurship and building also programs in the sports and fitness field, I would say. So did that for a while. First project, for example, was building corporate wellness platforms. In, let's say, 2017, which was quite an early day for digital corporate wellness. So that was really interesting. That was kind of the first touch point I have ever had with entrepreneurship. Great team there. Out of that early stage startup came a big coaching community that we built at the time for like strength, rehab, traditional Chinese medicine focused fitness coaches. So kind of niche interest. They're basically just stuck to the startup world ever since, just loved building brands, big passion for marketing. And then got the chance, basically first thing out of studies, to go into nutrition, where we scaled two supplement brands in Germany quite successfully. And then things just, basically went from there once I finished my studies.
Wow, that's amazing. So what were these nutrition brands? What kind of stuff were they doing?
Yeah, so at the time, it was like actually early pandemic days. So around like 2020. I'm not out of the university days for that long. Mm-hmm. I've seen a bit though. And at the time we saw that what wasn't really that present in the market yet is like single ingredients, high quality supplements that are kind of well known now, like patented resources, like patented ashwagandha types, everything that is purely very pure, but also just single source. So that's one thing that we focus on. And then on the other hand, we just saw a huge market gap more in the bodybuilding side of things. That was especially in the German market. So basically coming together there with a person who already owned facilities to produce supplements themselves, and then basically build up the whole marketing business development side of that, in terms of just addressing the right people at the right time. And growing that to seven figures in the first year.
Wow, that's very interesting. And then what sort of prompted the move out into London and For anyone listening as well, actually, how did you manage to sort of crack that role at FitTech Club for people, let's say, who are looking for work or looking for jobs? What do you think differentiated you? Of course, the work experience speaks for itself as well. Anything else that you think stood out and how you managed to navigate your way into London, into the sports industry in London?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for you guys understanding, so I think it's always a combination of just what you're able to deliver yourself in terms of expertise, but also just timing, you know, because at the time, like the supplement, building the supplement companies was the first thing that I did after studies. And that was, again, just bringing together my passions for fitness and also bodybuilding at the time, and combining that in the business context and really having a purpose in building those brands, being so closely associated with just the field I was working in. What happened in the early pandemic times was, of course, that the fitness tech industry especially saw a major boom, you know, with Peloton blowing up, all digital platforms, people not being able to go to the gym anymore. And that was the day, was the time, I would say, when I met Natalia Karbazova. She's the founder of the Fitness Club. She basically was the one who founded the first international flagship conference on fitness technology. And was looking for somebody who had a good understanding of the fitness space in general. And since I had been building ventures there ever since, that was an ideal fit, because she was coming more from the, I would say, journalism and just media side of things. So that in-depth knowledge and fitness was definitely key. Still, like, if I boil it down, the one single advice that I would give to people going into the career or having a certain passion in a certain branch of the industry is really, really taking a look at networks. And with networks, I mean, what are gathering places where people meet? This can be like trade shows, expos, but actually nowadays there is more online stuff. Like, there is more online communities. There's LinkedIn groups, Facebook groups on the surface, but also like Slack communities and different things, more, I would say, hidden. But those are definitely the places to go to just get an idea of what the market actually looks like. Because I have the feeling that when you come right out of studies, it can sometimes be extremely not overwhelming, but you're not seeing what the market really is, simply because you do not know enough. You know, there's a marketing division at Sports Club XY, yeah, sure, but there might be a whole industry that you're not even seeing that's super relevant for me. That's what it was for me with fitness technology, for example. Like, I knew there was a fitness space, but I wasn't really aware that, like, all the apps, the MyFitnessPal, Strava, Swift, you know, that those are all a certain sub-industry. And there is networks in that sub-industry that are perfectly utilizing and needing my expertise in a way. So getting a good understanding of the market, getting into groups, getting into gathering places, jumping over the shadow, as we would say in Germany, when it comes to just approaching people who have been in the field for a longer period of time to understand more, that's definitely the tip number one.
Any sort of top of your head, any actually gatherings or trade show, online communities or Slack channels that you'd recommend in London in terms of offline or any other stuff in terms of online?
So I would definitely in London recommend the Sports Tech Loft. Those guys are doing great work with startups, so that's definitely one. In case there's background noise, just let me know. Then I see if I have to move. Okay.
No.
So the Sports Tech Loft is definitely a good gathering place. And besides that, as I said, you know, maybe also just building a LinkedIn channel, connecting to a couple of people, dropping them personalized messages, what you're looking for, that usually does the job well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And in terms of your role at FitTech Club, could you elaborate a little bit in terms of, I know you worked in building the community, what does that actually mean on the inside? And if you could share some insight on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I came into the FitTech Club as first full-time employee after the founder, so super early days. Mm-hmm. And as always in the startup world, you know, it's basically wearing all multiple heads there. But I was basically mainly involved in two things in the end, I would say. One was driving strategic partnerships. So as you can imagine, you know, if you are a network of people, you want to partner with other networks of people. And this can be industry events, this can be associations, this can be trade associations especially. So that was mainly my job, to like do a lot of strategic partnership management there, but then also just to drive acquisition. And driving acquisition comes down to the same thing again if you're doing network stuff, namely connecting to more people virtually, but also in person, traveling a whole lot of conferences, but also, yeah, just being very active when it comes to personal branding and reaching out. So my job was mainly just connecting to more people and building better relations. And that is really like where my core expertise also came into play.
Any insight on kind of like who a typical customer was in terms of like acquisition? Who are the people that are typically part of this club? Any challenges that you face in terms of the acquisition part of it? Would be nice, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, the people we work with, our target group was founders and executives in the fitness and health space, especially with a focus on digital solutions. So this is anybody who builds apps. This is anybody who owns a gym chain and wants to integrate digital products. This is basically anybody who has any interest in driving their business forward in the future, because that will be tech-based to some degree in fitness and health. So top-level executives and founders were the target group. And as said, you know, driving acquisition with those kinds of people is relationship building game. You know, nobody buys first time, everybody's super well connected, nobody really needs the service as long as they don't feel the service. So it's about really becoming like clearly pointing out how can you add value for the people.
And was it the membership, was it a membership subscription sort of model, so you charge the customer to be a part of the community? I ask this because I want to talk to you a little bit about community building in general, and I feel like a lot of people starting to build the noise is fine, don't worry. A lot of people starting to build startups and trying to build communities around startups, they face this issue where if you want a community to be exclusive, and you want people to feel like there are a few of us, but then when you try to scale it and you try to monetize it, it loses that exclusivity and it loses that charm a little bit. So how were you? How do you scale a community like that?
Yeah, great question. I mean, first of all, I think like when you're starting a community, it's most important to get to a critical mass where the community just kind of fuels itself first. So that's the number one focus. So that's kind of normal that also in terms of acquisition, you will go for easier targets. You know, I don't believe you have a lot of leverage when it comes to exclusivity if you don't have some number behind it. So
yeah,
I would say just as a, you know, general perspective, the critical mass in that sense is around like 150 to 200 people. That's what you really want to get to have, for example, an engaged virtual community where people like use chat functions and also get in touch with each other all the time, so that you basically generate passive interaction without you having to facilitate that. So that's number one. Then, of course, when it comes to scaling the whole thing, you somehow have to find a way to charge higher tickets, but also to make things more exclusive. And the way you do this, from my experience, best is definitely if you find a way to segment a community further and give access to certain premium resources. So this can, what really works well here is like smaller mastermind groups, pulling people together in a smaller closed up room and curating that better. So that's definitely a nice upsell in a community function, but it comes down to just, you know, breaking down the offer further and thinking what can you do more than just giving people to either access to live events and passive chat functions. How do you make them feel like they are really standing out? And that is a concept by itself. I mean, even when it comes to engagement, that's nothing that you necessarily only want to sell. You want to like put gamification features in there and help people to engage based on their engage more based on what they give to the community and level them up in that sense. But that's a whole engagement concept behind that by itself.
Yeah, that's interesting. The segmentation bit is interesting as well. I feel the bigger challenge oftentimes with communities is the retention, keeping them engaged and interested more than it is to acquire them. Do you agree with that? And what was the sort of retention at Fit Tech Club and in general as well? Any sort of tips you have on how to retain people in the community?
Yes, definitely. I mean, you know, retention is a big one, but I like to break it down to basically three easy factors, like to make it very simple. People stay for three reasons. First of all, recognition. So if somebody delivers value for other people, it's on you to elevate the status. That's number one. Number two is results. People do not spend time anywhere if they do not get a certain return. in terms of knowledge, in terms of personal development, whatever. So you want to make sure they get results. And the third one is connection. So it's you on you to facilitate connection in between the members and to create touch points there. And if you keep that in mind, that people want recognition, that people want connection, that people want results, and they tick at least one of those boxes, it's quite likely they will stay. If they tick none, they will leave.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely makes sense. So I'm wondering, like, in terms of like even starting a community, because a lot of times it's hard to pull everyone into. You know, there's so many apps nowadays. There's so many channels, Slack channels, etc. Like a community could start in any shape or form, right? It could be a WhatsApp group. It could also be an app. It could be an offline event. But a lot of times it's hard to pull people into something new unless they know other people are in there, and then that becomes a chicken and egg situation, because I won't join till my friend joins, and my friend won't join till I join, and we're both kind of waiting for the other person. So let's say I'm someone who's looking to start a community of a niche fitness interest. Let's say we're a couple of people in London really interested in pickleball, and we want to come together, play pickleball, and there's a community that we need. We see some potential in starting a community there. How do you think would be the right way to approach in terms of starting? Where should we find these people initially?
Right. So I believe almost everybody listening could start a community, even a paid community, by themselves, simply because every single person probably has a certain topic or a certain niche interest where they don't feel really well connected to the closest people around them, but they definitely know people who also like that too. So as soon as you basically have 10 people that are kind of interested in what you're doing, that is enough to get them into a community if you then have a proper concept how to engage the people. What I always recommend is basically, first of all, thinking about what resource will trigger people to join. And from my experience, that often comes down to content or knowledge. Like that's usually the trigger. And once the people, as we talked about concerning retention, see some kind of results from the time they spend in the community, and you're able to combine the knowledge that they've gained with getting them to interact, that's when things take off. So obviously, you know, nobody will join a community if there is no value. But if there's proper value, if there is content that they don't find anywhere else or knowledge that they really need, that's basically how you trigger them. And then it's on you to keep them engaged over time and to also align the onboarding process in a way that basically all the three retention boxes are ticked basically within the first 3 days, to just get people acclimated to the culture and how the community should be used as soon as possible.
Yeah, that's super interesting, very helpful, actually, to understand, because I've also tried to be involved in this community building sort of space. Last question I want to ask you is, if you were to, say, pick between having 200 customers who pay £2,000 or, let's say, 20 customers who pay £20,000, what do you think would be a better approach, like in terms of less quantity, charge a higher ticket price, or more quantity, scale in that sense, but a lower ticket price for niche sports-based industry or fitness industry?
I would make it dependent on how much traffic you have.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because acquisition always comes down to traffic in the end of the day. So if you believe that the total addressable market is big enough and you have enough traffic on your brand page, personal page, whatever, to target that market holistically, I would probably go for a lower ticket and big scale approach. And if the market is really niche, like I said, you know, CEOs and founders in a specific sub niche, even the only way to do this is high ticket for sure.
Mm.
So it really comes down to how big is the total addressable market and how much traffic do you have?
And in terms of some of these startups, you know, as you spoke about earlier, that really boomed during COVID in terms of not just community space, but I'm also talking about like fitness tech stuff that was happening and booming. How do you think that they're performing now post-COVID? Do you think some of these things in terms of the tech meets fitness meets sport stuff was a little bit gimmicky at times? Do you still feel like there's a lot of value add post-COVID as well of these technologies? Or is it still at a stage where, they're a little bit gimmicky?
I wouldn't call it gimmicky less necessarily, but mm-hmm. I mean, the market always, you know, asks for what it can utilize the best in a way, right? And obviously, without gyms being open, there was a massive need for any kind of entertainment products. That's what you probably refer to when saying gimmicky, because it was entertainment mm-hmm. products in the end of the day, right? And those combining the movement side of things. So that need was there. It kind of faded. But what also happened is that the consumer expectation changed in the sense that there's well-researched studies from McKinsey, for example, that clearly showcase that previous to the pandemic, pretty much nobody who went to the gym expected any kind of digital offering. And that drastically changed, because that's just something that the people got used to and kind of see as a really nice add-on nowadays. Actually, it is also a fact that they're not really willing to pay for it, but still it's kind of being accepted. So it's something that is kind of reflecting into the customer expectations and what the offers kind of has to look like in the future to also differentiate from competitors probably. So there is definitely space for the tech side of things. And also besides that, you know, like every market boom, the downfall after just leads to consolidation. So the market won't go away anymore, but will definitely thin out. It's already happening. I mean, the last 24 months were really interesting in the fitness tech space, especially like with the fall down of Peloton and big gym chains like F45 in Australia and stuff like that. So it's been kind of a ride. But again, you know, I believe that the market will stay. And it will be kind of enhancing the traditional fitness space in the future. That will definitely happen. And everything moving forward, you know, what the Apple and Nike Pluses and the big players will do, you know, what big partnerships also form in the entertainment industry. I mean, there was just a massive partnership in between Nike and Netflix, for example, how that will blend in more into the mainstream over time. That will just, time will tell us that. So that's kind of my take on just what the industry was back then and what it is now.
And in terms of you working in the fitness and tech world, any interesting stuff that you've come across that you feel has more potential now than in the future? You know, a lot of people are building things with AI, and it's obviously the talk of the town now. And there are already some sort of startups that are incorporating AI and personalized workouts and personalized workout plans. Cameras can scan exactly your body movements, for example, and tell you if you're doing the squat right or wrong. There's that side of things. There's more fan-based sports engagement kind of thing also in AI. But have you seen any of these startups really do well, and any areas in particular that you feel are more interesting than the others?
Yeah, I mean, great question. AI is a tough one, I would say. Especially in the fitness industry, because what we're seeing, what pops up a lot, obviously, is like personalized chats, right? Mm-hmm. Which are, in the end of the day, all ChatGPT based, utilizing health data, interpreting that, you know, based on certain models, and then basically giving you personal recommendations. I mean, that is one use case. To be honest, I don't know if it's a standalone use case or if it will just be something that will be well integrated over time into platforms. Like the Whoops, like the Auras, just making things more personalized. I think what kind of is the pitfall around AI in the fitness space, especially the traditional fitness space, gym space, etc., is that a lot of the backend systems and also data sets that we have are not really utilized not able to utilize AI to the full degree right now. Simply because there's like a lot of catch up to do to more advanced more tech-based industries, and also once that happens, you know, AI will really impact the fitness industry in the traditional way. I mean, it's needless to say that all the big players, like no matter if it's Alphabet, Apple, whatever, they already utilizing AI, right? And they will continue to do that. Right now, there is honestly not a single purely AI-based application that has a significant market share. I believe like Whoop integrated some kind of AI, but it's not a standalone solution yet, or something that's only relying on that. So that's just something that will become more clearer over time. But I mean, the language models are definitely one step. I don't know if we'll be trained by AI generated personal trainers in the future. I honestly don't believe it.
Would you want to be trained by an AI trainer?
Good question. Probably not an animated one, but probably a well-balanced algorithm that really can holistically take into consideration what my sleep is like, what my performance levels are like, how my training schedule looked in the past, because I mean, that's calculations doing in my head right now, right? Or in my logbook, but this could be more accurate. So I think as soon as you have like years of data, training performance data, that can be extremely powerful. But right now, it's a matter of putting that into the correct holistic setting that also really is focused on my specific training needs, which are quite diverse nowadays, to make that a proper opportunity for myself.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like a lot of times we want to sell these products, but we're not quite sure if we want to consume these products. Because for me as well, like at the end of the day, when I'm thinking of like fitness or training or my own health, I already know what I kind of want to do, and I don't need a phone to tell me what to do. But potentially, I need a phone to help me track what I've done. And I feel like the simpler solutions aren't actually there in the market right now. Everything is like this amazing concept with animations and gamifications and stuff, but there's not enough products doing the simpler things well.
Yeah, I agree. Like, also, if I look at the products that were developed during the pandemic, I think the biggest pitfall, two big pitfalls when it comes to starting companies and innovative products that I've seen in the past. Number one, starting with creating the product before solving the solution, like really becoming clear what the solution is, like because that just won't have a market. That's super difficult. And then second of all, starting ventures or building products based on a certain potential in the market that you're seeing, just jumping on opportunities, then building to solve those pains, but not really by heart, really, really, really being excited about the product or the people you will be depending on. So those would definitely be the two advices that I would also be handing out here. Definitely become very clear if what you're doing is what you would still see yourself doing in 5 years, even if you wouldn't make any money from it. That's number one. And number two, what is the problem that you're solving, and then thinking about the how.
In terms of the making money part, for any community-based startups that you've seen or you've yourself been a part of as well, what's the balance typically between revenue streams from partnerships and sponsorships as opposed to revenue from the actual membership and customer?
That is completely individual. Completely depends on the community, on the business model. I would say, the money should come from where your focus is, right? So if you say, I want to build community-based membership model, you should at least aim for 60% of revenue through that stream. Once you've built up a brand reputation, you can basically do big events, charge views, sponsorships. Just try to get the money where the focus is. That's definitely my advice in that sense.
Okay, last question for you, Paul. Thanks for your time today. I'm a 22-year-old person with some money and some access to money, maybe, or I can get my hands on money somehow, beg, borrow, steal, and start my own venture. I'm very, very passionate about fitness. I'm very passionate about playing sports and technology, and I really want to start a business, let's say. I'm actually not 21, but it's hypothetical. I'm 21, and I'm ready to go. I want to be in the business in any country, where do you think I should be looking at in terms of, it could be anything, it could be, or maybe multiple examples would be great as well, in terms of like wellness, health, supplements, community-based tech, sports, like where do you think I should be focusing my energy on right now? And multiple focus areas would also be great.
I would advise to become clear about a couple of things. So, number one, answering the question, what are you truly passionate about? What fields? Trying to niche down in terms of the industry. Then secondly, who do you enjoy working with? Who do you really want to help? Who are the people you want to surround yourself with every day? Because in any business, you will be dependent on business partners. And if those business partners / clients are not the people that you could see yourself working with every single day, it's usually a pitfall. So first of all, what are you passionate about? Second of all, who do you like to work with? Third of all, what problems are those people facing that you can be solving, and then thinking about the how, like what solution could help them, what business models are out there, and where's potential market gaps. Once you have those four things figured out, you start talking to people, you get their feedback, you validate if the pain that you've identified is really a thing, and just navigate from there.
Well, that's very helpful. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for that. I want to ask you one more question as well while you were talking. It came to mind is when you were building the community and speaking to all these high level executives at companies, yeah. CEOs, etc. And now looking at it from a perspective of young students looking for a job in the industry, can you correlate to some things that stand out or what are some things that students can be doing that would make these CEOs look at their profile or just help them like stand out in an otherwise very crowded market and an industry that's hard to crack for a lot of students, especially?
Definitely. What I think, in the end of the day, what you're asking comes down to how should you be networking, right? In the early days. And I think, like, the core thing to get any kind of attention, no matter if it's virtual or in person, is to do your research first. And when I say doing your research first, know who you're talking to, know what has been on the news, develop very clear questions that you're truly curious about, and ask those. You know, if I bet that if you send a personalized email to top 10 level CEOs, you can somehow get hold of their email addresses, right? Mm-hmm. And it's highly personalized, valuable questions, and maybe also include something that you are able to give, like some insight or some recommendation or something that you've seen elsewhere that might be delivering any context or not even value, but has any context to what you're writing there, there's a very high chance that somebody will take the time and say, okay, this is standing out because nobody else is doing any kind of research when it comes to digital reach out. So that's really what I would advise, and then not only going for CEOs, but lower level executives to just get into a bit of a number game, you know, don't reach out to 10, reach out to 100, and that will definitely do the thing.
Thanks, Paul, for your time. And I hope you have a great time in Bali. Hopefully see you soon in London.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Ishan, it was a pleasure. To everybody listening to this, keep the good vibes around entrepreneurship up. The opportunities are ridiculously big, especially in the online world that we live in today. You know, I have testimonies of that around me here every single day. There is dozens and dozens and dozens of 17-year-olds building what you are trying to build. So it's a no-brainer to get started. You can do this too. And based on that, just keep crushing it and hope to talk to you soon, Ishan.